steps along the cliffside, his breath pummeling in the icy air. It took me only a moment to realize it was Mal, head bent, pack on his shoulders.
"Looks bracing. If he keeps this up, I may actually have to start exerting myself."
Nikolai's tone was light, but I could feel his clever hazel eyes on me.
"Assuming we best the Darkling, as I'm sure we will, does Mal plan to stay on as the captain of your guard?"
I caught myself before I could rub my thumb over the scar on my palm. "I don't know. Despite everything that had happened, I wanted to keep Mal near. That wouldn't be fair to either of us," I made myself say. "I think it might be better if he was reassigned. He's good in combat, but he's a better tracker."
"You know he won't take a commission away from the fighting."
"Do what you think is best." The pain was like a slender knife gliding right between my ribs. I was cutting Mal out of my life, but my voice was steady. Nikolai had taught me well. I tried to hand the ring back. "I can't accept this. Not now. Maybe not ever."
"Keep it," he said, curling my fingers over the emerald. "A privateer learns to press any advantage."
"And a prince?"
"Princes get used to the word, yes."
When I got back to my room that evening, Nikolai had more surprises waiting. I hesitated, then turned on my heel and marched down the corridor to where the other girls were lodged. For a long second, I just stood there, feeling shy and foolish. Then I forced myself to knock. Nadia answered. Behind her, I saw Tamar had come to visit and was sharpening her axes by the window. Jenya sat at the table, sewing gold thread around another eye patch, and Zoya was lounging on one of the beds, keeping a feather aloft with a gust from her fingertips.
"I need to show you something," I said.
"What is it?"
asked Zoya, keeping her eyes on the feather.
"Just come and see."
She rolled herself off the bed with an exasperated sigh. I led them down the hallway to my room and threw open the door. Jenya dove into the pile of gowns laid out on my bed.
"Silk," she moaned. "Velvet."
Zoya picked up a kefta hanging over the back of my chair. It was gold brocade, the sleeves and hem embroidered lavishly in blue, the cuffs marked with jeweled sunbursts.
"Sable," she said to me, stroking the lining. "I have never loathed you more."
"That one's mine," I said.
"But the rest are up for grabs. I can't wear all of them in Westrovka."
"Did Nikolai have these made for you?" Nadia asked.
"He's not a big believer in half measures."
"Are you sure he wants you giving them away?"
"Lending," I corrected. "And if he doesn't like it, he can learn to leave more careful instructions."
"It's smart," Tamar said, tossing a teal cape over her shoulders and looking at herself in the mirror. "He needs to look like a king, and you need to look like a queen."
"There's something else," I said.
Again, I felt that shyness creep over me. I still didn't quite know how to behave around the other Gracia. Were they friends? Subjects? This was new territory. But I didn't want to be alone in my room with nothing but my thoughts and a pile of dresses for company. I took out Nikolai's ring and set it on the table.
"Saints," breathed Jenya. "That's the Lance of Emerald."
It seemed to glow in the lamplight, the tiny diamonds twinkling around it.
"Did he just give it to you? To keep?"
asked Nadia. Jenya seized my arm.
"Did he propose?"
"Not exactly."
"He might as well have," Jenya said. "That ring is an heirloom. The queen wore it everywhere, even to sleep."
"Toss him over," Zoya said. "Break his heart cruelly. I will gladly give our poor prince comfort, and I would make a magnificent queen."
I laughed.
"You actually might, Zoya, if you could stop being horrible for a minute." "With that kind of incentive, I can manage a minute. Possibly two."
I rolled my eyes.
"It's just a ring."
Zoya sighed and held the emerald up so it flashed.
I am horrible, she said abruptly. All these people dead, and I miss pretty things.
Jenya bit her lip, then blurted,
I miss almond coolidge, and butter, and the cherry jam the cooks used to bring back from the market in Balakirev.
I miss the sea, said Tamar, and my hammock aboard the Volkvolny.
I miss sitting by the lake at the little palace,
Nadia put in.
Drinking my tea, everything feeling peaceful.
Zoya looked at her boots and said,
I miss knowing what happens next.
Me too, I confessed. Zoya set the ring down.
Will you say yes?
He didn't actually propose.
But he will.
Maybe. I don't know. She gave a disgusted snort.
I lied. Now I have never loathed you more. It would be something special, said Tamar, to have a Grisha on the throne.
She's right, added Jenya. To be the ones to rule instead of just to serve.
They wanted a Grisha queen. Mal wanted a commoner queen. And what did I want?
Peace for Ravka. A chance to sleep easy in my bed without fear.
An end to the guilt and dread that I woke to every morning. There were old wants, too, to be loved for who I was, not what I could do. To lie in a meadow with a boy's arms around me and watch the wind move the clouds. But those dreams belonged to a girl, not to the sun summoner, not to a saint.
Zoya sniffed, setting a seed-pearl kokochnik atop her hair. I still say it should be me.
Jenny tossed a velvet slipper at her.
The day I curtsy to you is the day David performs an opera naked in the middle of the shadow fold.
Like I'd have you in my court.
You should be so lucky. Come here, that headpiece is completely crooked.
I picked up the ring again, turning it over in my hand. I couldn't quite bring myself to put it on. Nadia bumped my shoulder with her own.
There are worse things than a prince.
True.
Better things, too, Tamar said.
She shoved a cobalt lace gown at Nadia.
Try this one on.
Nadia held it up.
Are you out of your head? The bodice might as well be cut to the navel.
Tamar grinned.
Exactly.
Well, Alina can't wear it, said Zoya. Even she'll fall right out of it onto her dessert plate.
Diplomacy, shouted Tamar.
Nadia collapsed into giggles.
West Ravka declares for the Sun Summoner's bosom!
I tried to scowl, but I was laughing too hard.
I hope you're all enjoying yourselves.
Tamar hooked a scarf over Nadia's neck and drew her in for a kiss.
Oh, for saint's sake, complained Zoya. Is everyone pairing up now?
Jenya snickered.
Take heart. I've seen Stig casting mournful glances your way.
He's Fjärden, Zoya said. That's the only kind of glance he has. And I can arrange my own assignations, thank you very much.
We sorted through the trunks of clothes, choosing the gowns, coats, and jewels best suited to the trip. Nikolai had been strategic, as always. Each dress was wrought in shades of blue and gold. I wouldn't have minded some variety, but this trip was about performance, not pleasure. The girls stayed until the lamps burned low, and I was grateful for their company. But when they'd claimed the dresses they liked, and the rest of the finery had been wrapped and returned to the trunks, they said their goodnights. I picked up the ring from the table, feeling the absurd weight of it in my palm. Soon the kingfisher would return, and Nikolai and I would leave for West Ravka. By then, Mal and his team would be on their way to the Sigurzoi. That was the way it should be. I'd hated life at court, but Mal had despised it. He'd be just as miserable standing guard at banquets in Oskervo. If I was honest with myself, I could see that he'd flourished since we'd left the little palace, even underground. He had become a leader in his own right, found a new sense of purpose. I couldn't say he seemed happy, but maybe that would come in time,
with peace, with a chance for a future. We would find the Firebird. We would face the Darkling. Maybe we'd even win. I would put on Nikolai's ring, and Mal would be reassigned. He would have the life he should have had, that he might have had without me. So why did that knife between my ribs keep twisting? I lay down on my bed, starlight pouring through the window, the emerald clutched in my hand. Later, I could never be sure if I'd done it deliberately or if it was an accident, my bruised heart plucking at that invisible tether. Maybe I was just too tired to resist his pull. I found myself in a blurry room, staring at the Darkling. Chapter 9. He was sitting on the edge of a table, his shirt crumpled into a ball at his knees, his arms raised above his head as the vague shape of a corporalnik healer came in and out of focus, tending to a bloody gash in the Darkling's side. I thought at first we might be in the infirmary at the little palace, but the space was too dark and blurry for me to tell. I tried not to notice the way he looked, his mussed hair, the shadowed ridges of his bare chest. He seemed so human, just a boy wounded in battle. Or maybe sparring. Not a boy, I reminded myself. A monster who has lived hundreds of years and taken hundreds of lives. His jaw tensed as the corporalnik finished her work. When the skin had knitted together, the Darkling dismissed her with a wave. She hovered briefly, then slipped away, fading into nothing.
"There's something I've been wondering," he said.
No greeting, no preamble. I waited.
"The night that Bagra told you what I intended. The night you fled the little palace. Did you hesitate?"
"Yes."
"In the days after you left, did you ever think of coming back?"
"I did," I admitted.
"But you chose not to."
I knew I should go. I should have at least stayed silent, but I was so weary and it felt so easy to be here with him. It wasn't just what Bagra said that night. "You lied to me. You deceived me. You drew me in.
Seduced me. Made me want you. Made me question my own heart." "I needed your loyalty, Alina. I needed you bound to me by more than duty or fear."
His fingers tested the flesh where his wound had been. Only a mild redness remained.
"There are rumors that your Lansov prince has been sighted."
I drifted nearer, trying to keep my voice casual. "Where?" He glanced up, his lips curling in a slight smile.
"Do you like him?"
"Does it matter?"
"It's harder when you like them. You mourn them more."
How many had he mourned? Had there been friends? A wife? Had he ever let anyone get that close?
"Tell me, Alina," said the Darkling. "Has he claimed you yet?"
"Claimed me? Like a peninsula?"
"No blushes. No averted eyes. How you've changed. What about your faithful tracker? Will he sleep curled at the foot of your throne?"
He was pressing, trying to provoke me. Instead of shying away, I moved closer. "You came to me wearing Mal's face that night in your chambers. Was it because you knew I would turn you away?" His fingers tightened on the table's edge, but then he shrugged.
"He was the one you longed for. Do you still?"
"No."
"An apt pupil, but a terrible liar."
"Why do you have such disdain for Atkazatsia?"
"Not disdain. Understanding."
"They're not all fools and weaklings."
"What they are is predictable,"
he said.
"The people would love you for a time. But what would they think when their good king aged and died, while his witch of a wife remained young. When all those who remember your sacrifices are dust in the ground, how long do you think it will take for their children or their grandchildren to turn on you?
His words sent a chill through me. I still couldn't get my head around the idea of the long life that lay ahead of me, that yawning abyss of eternity.
You never considered it, did you? Said the Darkling. You live in a single moment. I live in a thousand.
Are we not all things?
In a flash, his hands snaked out and seized my wrist. The room came into sudden focus. He yanked me close, wedging me between his knees. His other hand pressed to the small of my back. His strong fingers splayed over the curve of my spine.
You were meant to be my balance, Alina. You are the only person in the world who might rule with me, who might keep my power in check.
And who will balance me?
The words emerged before I thought better of them, giving raw voice to a thought that haunted me even more than the possibility that the Firebird didn't exist. What if I'm no better than you? What if instead of stopping you, I'm just another avalanche?
He studied me for a long moment. He had always watched me this way, as if I were an equation that didn't quite tally.
I want you to know my name, he said. The name I was given, not the title I took for myself. Will you have it, Alina?
I could feel the weight of Nikolai's ring in my palm, back at the spinning wheel. I didn't have to stand here in the Darkling's arms. I could vanish from his grip, slide back into consciousness in the safety of a stone room hidden in a mountaintop. But I didn't want to go. Despite everything, I wanted this whispered confidence. Yes, I breathed. After a long moment, he said,
Alexander.
A little laugh escaped me. He arched a brow, a smile tugging at his lips.
What?
It's just so common. Such an ordinary name, held by kings and peasants alike. I'd known two Alexanders in Karimsen alone, three in the First Army. One of them had died on the fold. His smile deepened and he cocked his head to the side. It almost hurt to see him this way.
Will you say it?
He asked. I hesitated, feeling danger crowd in on me.
Alexander, I whispered.
His grin faded and his gray eyes seemed to flicker.
Again,
he said.
Alexander.
He leaned in. I felt his breath against my neck, then the press of his mouth against my skin just above the collar. Almost a sigh. Don't, I said. I drew back, but he held me tighter. His hand went to the nape of my neck, long fingers twining in my hair, easing my head back. I closed my eyes.
Let me,
he murmured against my throat, his heel hooked around my leg, bringing me closer. I felt the heat of his tongue, the flex of hard muscle beneath bare skin as he guided my hands around his waist.
It isn't real, he said. Let me.
I felt that rush of hunger, the steady longing beat of desire that neither of us wanted, but that gripped us anyway. We were alone in the world, unique. We were bound together and always would be. And it didn't matter. I couldn't forget what he'd done, and I wouldn't forgive what he was. A murderer, a monster, a man who had tortured my friends and slaughtered the people I'd tried to protect. I shoved away from him. It's real enough. His eyes narrowed.
I grow weary of this game, Alina.
I was surprised at the anger that surged to life in me. Weary? You've toyed with me at every turn. You haven't tired of the game. You're just sorry I'm not so easily played.
Clever, Alina,
he bit out.
The apt pupil. I'm glad you came tonight. I want to share my news.
He yanked his bloody shirt over his head.
I'm going to enter the fold.
Go ahead, I said,
The Volcra deserve another piece of you.
They will not have it.
You hope to find their appetites changed, or is this just more madness?
I am not mad. Ask David what secrets he left for me to discover at the palace.
I stilled.
Another clever one,
said the Darkling.
I'll be taking him back too when this is all over. Such an able mind.
You're bluffing, I said. The Darkling smiled, but this time the turn of his lips was cold. He shoved off the table and stalked toward me.
I will enter the fold, Alina, and I will show West Rothka what I can do even without the Sun Summoner. And when I have crushed Lansov's only ally, I will hunt you like an animal. You will find no sanctuary. You will have no peace.
He loomed over me, his gray eyes glinting.
Fly back home to your Otkazatsia, he snarled. Hold him tight. The rules of this game are about to change.
The Darkling raised his hand and the cut tore through me. I shattered and gusted back into my body with an icy jolt. I clutched at my torso, heart hammering in my chest, still feeling the slice of shadow through it, but I was whole and unmarked. I stumbled out of bed, trying to find the lantern, then gave up and fumbled around until I found my coat and boots. Tamar was standing guard outside my room. "Where is David lodged?" I asked. "Just down the corridor, with Adric and Harshaw." "Are Mal and Tolia sleeping?" She nodded. "Wake them up." She slipped into the guard's room, and Mal and Tolia were outside with us seconds later, awake instantly in the way of soldiers and already pulling on their boots. Mal had his pistol. "You won't need that," I said. "At least I don't think you will." I considered sending someone to get Nikolai, but I wanted to know what we were dealing with first. We strode down the hall, and when we got to David's room, Tamar rapped once at the door before pushing in. Apparently, Adric and Harshaw had been evicted for the night. A very bleary Jenya and David blinked up at us from beneath the covers of a single narrow cot. I pointed at David. "Get dressed," I said. "You have 2 minutes."
"What?"
Jenya began. "Just do it." We slipped back out the door to wait. Mal gave a little cough.
"Can't say I'm surprised,"
Tamar snorted. After his little speech in the war room, even I considered pouncing on him. Moments later, the door cracked open, and a disheveled, barefoot David ushered us in. Jenny was seated cross-legged on the cot, her red curls going every which way.
"What is it?" said David. "What's wrong?"
"I've received information that the Darkling intends to use the fold against West Rovka." "Did Nikolai?" Tamar began. I held up a hand. "I need to know if it's possible." David shook his head.
"He can't without you. He needs to enter the Unsea to expand it."
"He claims he can. He claims you left secrets at the little palace."
"Wait a minute," said Jenya. "Where is this information coming from?"
"Sources," I said curtly. "David, what did he mean?" I didn't want to believe David would betray us, at least not deliberately. David frowned.
"When we fled Osalta, I left my old notebooks behind, but they're hardly dangerous."
"What was in them?" asked Tamar.
"All kinds of things,"
he said, his nimble fingers pleating and unpleating the fabric of his trousers.
"The designs for the mirror dishes, lens to filter different waves for the spectrum. Nothing he could use to enter the fold. But..."
He paled slightly.
"What else?"
"It was just an idea."
"What else?"
"There was a plan for a glass skiff that Nikolai and I came up with."
I frowned and glanced at Mal, then at the others. They all looked as puzzled as I did. Why would he want a glass skiff?
"The frame is made to hold Lumia."
I made an impatient gesture. "What's Lumia?"
"A variation on liquid fire."
Saints.
Oh, David, you didn't. Liquid fire was one of Morozova's creations. It was sticky, flammable, and created a blaze that was almost impossible to extinguish. It was so dangerous that Morozova had destroyed the formula only hours after he'd created it.
No! David held his hands up defensively. No, no, this is better, safer. The reaction only creates light, not heat. I came up with it when we were trying to find ways to improve the flash bombs for fighting the Nichivoya. It wasn't applicable, but I liked the idea, so I kept it for later.
He shrugged helplessly. It burns without heat?
It's just a source of artificial sunlight.
Enough to keep the Volcra at bay.
Yes, but it's useless to the Darkling. It has a limited burn life, and you need sunlight to activate it.
How much?
Very little, that was the point. It was just another way of magnifying your power, like the dishes. But there isn't any light in the fold, so...
I held out my hands, and shadows spilled over the walls. Jenya cried out, and David shrank back against the bed. Tolya and Tamar reached for their weapons. I dropped my arms, and the shadows returned to their ordinary forms. Everyone gaped at me.
You have his power?
Whispered Jenya.
No,
just a scrap of it. Mal thought I'd taken it from the Darkling. Maybe the Darkling had taken something from me, too.
That's how you made the shadows jump when we were in the kettle, said Tolya.
I nodded. Tamar jabbed a finger at Mal.
You lied to us.
I kept her secrets, Mal said. You would have done the same.
She crossed her arms. Tolya laid a big hand on her shoulder. They all looked upset, but not as scared as they might have.
You see what this means, I said. If the Darkling has even a remnant of my power. Would it be enough to hold off the Volcra?
Asked Jenya.
No.
I said. I don't think so. I'd needed an amplifier before I was able to command enough light to safely enter the fold. Of course, there was no guarantee that the Darkling hadn't taken more of my power when we'd faced each other in the chapel, and yet, if he'd been able to truly wield light, he would have acted before this.
It doesn't matter, said David miserably. He only needs enough sunlight to activate the Lumia once he's in the fold.
Plenty of light for protection, said Mal. A well-armed skiff of Grisha and soldiers.
Tamar shook her head. Even for the Darkling, that seems risky. But Tolya answered her with my own thoughts.
You're forgetting the Nichivoya.
Shadow soldiers fighting Volcra,
Jenya said in horror.
Saints, swore Tamar. Who do you root for?
The problem was always containment, said David. Lumia eats through everything. The only thing that worked was glass, but that presents its own engineering problems. Nikolai and I never resolved them. It was just for fun.
If the Darkling hadn't solved those problems already, he would. You will find no sanctuary. You will have no peace. I put my head in my hands.
He's going to break West Rothka.
And after that, no country would dare to stand with me or Nikolai. Chapter 10 A half hour later, we were seated at the end of a table in the galley, empty glasses of tea in front of us. Jenya had made herself scarce, but David was there, his head bent over a pile of drafting paper as he tried to recreate the plans for the glass skiff and the formula for Lumia from memory. For better or worse, I didn't believe he'd aided the Darkling intentionally. David's crime was hunger for knowledge, not power. The rest of the spinning wheel was empty and silent. Most of the soldiers and rogue Grisha still asleep. Despite being hauled out of bed in the middle of the night, Nikolai managed to look put together, even with his olive drab coat thrown over his nightshirt and trousers. It hadn't taken long to update him on all I had learned, and I wasn't surprised by the first question out of his mouth.
How long have you known this? He said. Why didn't you tell me sooner?
An hour, maybe less. I only waited to confirm the information with David.
That's impossible.
Improbable, I corrected gently. Nikolai.
My gut clenched. I glanced at Mal. I hadn't forgotten the way he'd reacted when I'd finally told him I was seeing visions of the Darkling. And this was far worse, because I'd gone looking for him.
I heard it from the Darkling's lips himself. He told me.
Beg your pardon?
I can visit him, like a kind of vision. I sought him out.
There was a long beat.
You can spy on him?
Not exactly. I tried to explain the way the rooms appeared to me, how he appeared. I can't hear other people, or really even see them if they aren't immediately next to him, or in contact with him. It's as if he's the only real material thing.
Nikolai's fingers were drumming on the tabletop.
But we could try to probe for information, he said, his voice excited. Maybe even feed him false intelligence.
I blinked. That quickly, Nikolai was strategizing. I should have been used to it by now.
Can you do this with other Grisha? Maybe try to get in their heads.
I don't think so. The Darkling and I are connected. We probably always will be.
I have to warn Westrovka, he said. They'll need to evacuate the area along the shore of the Fold.
Nikolai rubbed a hand over his face. It was the first crack I'd seen in his confidence.
They won't keep to the Alliance, will they?
Mal asked.
I doubt it. The blockade was a gesture Westrovka was willing to make when they thought they were safe from reprisal.
If they capitulate, said Tamar, will the Darkling still march? This isn't just about the blockade, I said. It's about isolating us, making sure we don't have anywhere to turn.
And it's about power. He wants to use the Fold.
He always has.
I restrained the urge to touch my bare wrist.
It's a compulsion.
What kind of numbers can you raise?
Mal asked Nikolai.
All told, we could probably rally a force of roughly 5,000. They're spread throughout cells in the northwest, so the problem is mobilizing, but I think it can be done. We also have reason to suspect some of the militias may be loyal to us. There have been massive desertions from the base at Politsnaya and the northern and southern fronts. What about the Soldat Sol? Asked Tolia. They'll fight. I know they would lay down their lives for Alina. They've done it before.
I rubbed my arms, thinking of more lives lost, of Ruby's fiercely cheerful face marked by the sunburst tattoo.
Nikolai frowned.
But can we rely on the apparat?
The priest had been instrumental in the coup that had almost brought down Nikolai's father, and unlike Jenya, he hadn't been a vulnerable servant victimized by the king. He'd been a trusted advisor.
What exactly does he want?
I think he wants to survive, I said. I doubt he'll risk a head-on confrontation with the Darkling unless he's sure of the outcome.
We could use the additional numbers, Nikolai admitted.
A dull ache was forming near my right temple.
I don't like this, I said. Any of it. You're talking about throwing a lot of bodies at the Nichevoya. The casualties will be unheard of.
You know I'll be right out there with them, said Nikolai.
All that means is that I can add your number to the dead.
If the Darkling uses the Fold to sever us from any possible allies, then Ravka is his. He'll only get stronger. Consolidate his forces. I won't just give up.
You saw what those monsters did at the Little Palace.
You said it yourself. He won't stop. He needs to use his power, and the more he uses it, the more he'll crave. This may be our last opportunity to bring him down. Besides, rumor has it, Aretsev here's quite the tracker. If he finds the Firebird, we may just stand a chance.
And if he doesn't?
Nikolai shrugged.
We put on our best clothes and die like heroes.
Dawn was breaking by the time we finished hashing out the specifics of what we intended to do next. The Kingfisher had returned, and Nikolai sent it right back out again with a refreshed crew and a warning addressed to Westrovka's merchant council that the Darkling might be planning an attack. They also carried an invitation to meet with him and the Sun Summoner in Neutral Kerch. It was too dangerous for Nikolai and me to risk getting caught in what might soon be enemy territory. The Pelican was back in the hangar and would soon depart for Keremsen without us. I wasn't sure if I was sorry or relieved that I wouldn't be able to travel with them to the orphanage, but there just wasn't time for a detour. Mal and his team would leave for the Sikorzoi tomorrow aboard the Bittern, and I would meet up with them a week later. We would keep to our plan and hope the Darkling didn't act before then. There was more to discuss, but Nikolai had letters to write, and I needed to talk to Bagra. The time for lessons was over. I found her in her darkened lair, the fire already stoked, the room unbearably warm. Misha had just brought in her breakfast tray. I waited as she ate her buckwheat kasha and sipped bitter black tea. When she was done, Misha opened the book to begin his reading, but Bagra silenced him quickly.
"Take the tray up," she said. "The little saint has something on her mind. If we make her wait any longer, she may jump out of her seat and shake me."
"Horrible woman, did nothing escape her?" Misha lifted the tray. Then he hesitated, shifting from one foot to the other.
"Do I have to come right back down?"
"Stop wriggling like a grub," Bagra snapped, and Misha froze.
She gave a wave.
"Go on, you useless thing, but don't be late with my lunch."
He raced out the door, dishes rattling, and kicked it shut behind him.
"This is your fault," Bagra complained. "He can never be still anymore."
"He's a little boy. It's not something they're known for." I made a mental note to have someone continue Misha's fencing lessons while we were gone. Bagra scowled and leaned closer to the fire, pulling her furs close around her.
"Well," she said, "we're alone. What is it you want to know? Or would you rather sit there biting your tongue for another hour?"
I wasn't sure how to proceed. "Bagra?"
"Either spit it out or let me take a nap."
"The Darkling may have found a way to enter the fold without me. He'll be able to use it as a weapon. If there's anything you can tell us, we need information."
"Always the same question."
"When I asked you if Moritzova could have left the amplifiers unfinished, you said it wasn't his way. Did you know him?"
"We're done here, girl," she said, turning back to the fire. "You've wasted your morning."
"You told me once that you hoped for redemption for your son. This may be my last chance to stop him."
"Ah, so you hope to save my son now? How forgiving of you."
I took a deep breath. "Alexander," I whispered. She stilled. "His true name is Alexander. And if he takes this step, he'll be lost forever. We may all be."
"That name," Bagra leaned back in her chair. "Only he could have told you. When?"
I'd never spoken of the visions to Bagra, and I didn't think I wanted to now. Instead, I repeated my question. "Bagra, did you know Moritzova?" She was quiet for a long time, the only sound the crackle of the fire. Finally she said,
"As well as anyone did."
Though I'd suspected as much, the fact was hard to believe. I'd seen Moritzova's writings. I wore his amplifiers, but he had never seemed real. He was a saint with a gilded halo, more legend than man to me.
"There's a bottle of kvass on a shelf in the corner," she said, "out of Misha's reach. Bring it, and a glass."
It was early for kvass, but I wasn't going to argue. I brought down the bottle and poured for her. She took a long sip and smacked her lips together.
"The new king doesn't stint, does he?"
She sighed and settled back.
All right, little saint. Since you want to know about Morozova and his precious amplifiers, I'll tell you a story. The one I used to tell a little boy with dark hair. A silent boy who rarely laughed, who listened more closely than I realized. A boy who had a name and not a title.
In the firelight, the shadowy pools of her eyes seemed to flicker and shift.
Morozova was the bonesmith, one of the greatest fabricators who ever lived, and a man who tested the very boundaries of Grisha power. But he was also just a man with a wife. She was Otkazatsya, and though she loved him, she did not understand him.
I thought of the way the Darkling talked about Otkazatsya, the predictions he made about Mal and the way I'd been treated by Ravka's people. Had he learned those lessons from Bagra?
"I should tell you that he loved her, too," she continued. "At least I think he did. But it was never enough to make him stop his work. It couldn't temper the need that drove him. This is the curse of Grisha power. You know the way of it, little saint. They spent over a year hunting the stag in Sipea. 2 years sailing the Bone Road in search of the Sea Whip. Great successes for the Bonesmith. The first 2 phases of his grand scheme. But when his wife became pregnant, they settled in a small town. A place where he could continue his experiments and hatch his plans for which creature would become the third amplifier. They had little money. When he could be pulled away from his studies, he made his living as a woodworker, and the villagers occasionally came to him with wounds and ailments.
"He was a healer?" I asked. "I thought he was a fabricator."
Morozova did not draw those distinctions. Few Grisha did in those days. He believed if the science was small enough, anything was possible. And for him, it often was.
Are we not all things?
The townspeople viewed Morozova and his family with a combination of pity and distrust. His wife wore rags, and his child was rarely seen. Her mother kept her to the house and the fields around it. You see, this little girl had started to show her power early, and it was like nothing ever known.
Bagra took another sip of kvass.
She could summon darkness.
The words hung in the heated air, their meaning settling over me. You? I breathed. Then the Darkling...
I am Morozova's daughter, and the Darkling is the last of Morozova's line.
She emptied her glass.
My mother was terrified of me. She was sure that my power was some kind of abomination, the result of my father's experiments. And she may well have been right. To dabble in Merzost. Well, the results are never quite what one would hope. She hated to hold me, could hardly bear to be in the same room with me. It was only when her second child was born that she came back to herself at all. Another little girl. This one normal like her, powerless and pretty. How my mother doted on her.
Years had passed, hundreds, maybe 1,000, but I recognized the hurt in her voice, the sting of always feeling underfoot and unwanted.
My father was readying to leave to hunt the Firebird. I was just a little girl, but I begged him to take me along. I tried to make myself useful, but all I did was annoy him, and eventually he banned me from his workshop.
She tapped the table, and I filled her glass once more.
And then one day, Morozova had to leave his workbench. He was drawn to the pasture behind his home by the sound of my mother's screams. I had been playing dolls, and my sister had whined and howled and stamped her little feet until my mother insisted that I give over my favorite toy, a wooden swan carved by our father in one of the rare moments that he paid me any attention. It had wings so detailed, they felt nearly downy, and perfect webbed feet that kept it balanced in water. My sister had it in her hands less than a minute before she snapped its slender neck. Remember, if you can, that I was just a child, a lonely child, with so few treasures of my own. She lifted her glass, but did not drink. I lashed out at my sister. With the cut. I tore her in two.
I tried not to picture it, but the image rose up sharp in my mind. A muddy field, a dark-haired little girl, her favorite toy in pieces. She'd thrown a tantrum, as children do. But she'd been no ordinary child. What happened? I finally whispered.
The villagers came running. They held my mother back so that she could not get at me. They couldn't make sense of what she was saying. How could a little girl have done such a thing? The priest was already praying over my sister's body when my father arrived. Without a word, Morozova knelt down beside her and began to work. The townspeople didn't understand what was happening, but they sensed power gathering.
Did he save her?
Yes, said Bagra simply. He was a great healer. And he used every bit of his skill to bring her back, weak, wheezing, and scarred, but alive.
I'd read countless versions of Sankt Ilya's martyrdom. The details of the story had been distorted over time. He'd healed his child, not a stranger's, a girl, not a boy. But I suspected one thing that hadn't changed was the ending, and I shivered at the thought of what came next.
It was too much, Bagra said. The villagers knew what death looked like. That child should have died. And maybe they were resentful, too. How many loved ones had they lost to illness or injury since Morozova had come to their town? How many could he have saved? Maybe it was not just horror or righteousness that drove them, but anger as well. They put him in chains, and my sister, a child who should have had the sense to stay dead. There was no one to defend my father, no one to speak on my sister's behalf. We had lived on the outskirts of their lives and made no friends. They marched him to the river. My sister had to be carried. She had only just learned to walk and couldn't manage it with the chains.
I clenched my fists in my lap. I didn't want to hear the rest.
As my mother wailed and pleaded, as I cried and fought to get free from some barely known neighbor's arms, they shoved Morozova and his youngest daughter off the bridge, and we watched them disappear beneath the water, dragged under by the weight of their iron chains.
Bagra emptied her glass and turned it over on the table.
I never saw my father or my sister again.
We sat in silence as I tried to piece together the implications of what she'd said. I saw no tears on Bagra's cheeks. Her grief is old, I reminded myself, and yet I didn't think pain like that ever faded entirely. Grief had its own life, took its own sustenance. Bagra, I said, pushing on, ruthless in my own way. If Morozova died...
I never said he died. That was the last I ever saw of him. But he was a Grisha of immense power. He might well have survived the fall.
In chains?
He was the greatest fabricator who ever lived. It would take more than Otkazatsya steel to hold him.
And you believe he went on to create the third amplifier?
His work was his life, she said.
And the bitterness of that neglected child etched her words.
If he'd had breath in his body, he would not have stopped searching for the Firebird. Would you?
No, I admitted. The Firebird had become my own obsession, a thread of compulsion that linked me to Morozova across centuries. Could he have survived? Bagra seemed so certain that he had. And what about her sister? If Morozova had managed to save himself, might he have rescued his child from the grasp of the river and used his skill to revive her once more? The thought shook me. I wanted to clutch it tightly, turn it over in my hands, but there was still more I needed to know. What did the villagers do to you?
Her rasping chuckle snaked through the room, lifting the hair on my arms.
If they'd been wise, they would have thrown me in the river, too. Instead, they drove my mother and me out of town and left us to the mercy of the woods. My mother was useless. She tore at her hair and wept until she made herself sick. Finally, she just lay down and wouldn't get up, no matter how I cried and called her name. I stayed with her as long as I could. I tried to make a fire to keep her warm, but I didn't know how. She shrugged. I was so hungry. Eventually, I left her and wandered, delirious and filthy, until I came to a farm. They took me in and put together a search party, but I couldn't find the way back to her. For all I know, she starved to death on the forest floor.
I stayed quiet, waiting. That kvass was beginning to look very good.
Ravka was different then. Grisha had no sanctuary. Powers like ours ended in fates like my father's. I kept mine hidden. I followed tales of witches and saints and found the secret enclaves where Grisha studied their science. I learned everything I could. And when the time came, I taught my son.
But what about his father?
Bagra gave another harsh laugh.
You want a love story, too? There's none to be had. I wanted a child, so I sought out the most powerful Grisha I could find. He was a heart-render. I don't even remember his name.
For a brief moment, I glimpsed the ferocious girl she had been, fearless and wild, a Grisha of extraordinary ability. Then she sighed and shifted in her chair, and the illusion was gone, replaced by a tired old woman huddling by a fire.
My son was not. He began so well. We moved from place to place. We saw the way our people lived, the way they were mistrusted, the lives they were forced to eke out in secrecy and fear. We vowed that we would someday have a safe place, that Grisha power would be something to be valued and coveted, something our country would treasure. We would be Ravkins, not just Grisha. That dream was the seed of the Second Army, a good dream. If I'd known...
She shook her head.
I gave him his pride. I burdened him with ambition, but the worst thing I did was try to protect him. You must understand, even our own kind shunned us, feared the strangeness of our power.
There are no others like us.
I never wanted him to feel the way I had as a child, said Bagra. So I taught him that he had no equal, that he was destined to bow to no man. I wanted him to be hard, to be strong. I taught him the lesson my mother and father taught me. to rely on no one. That love, fragile and fickle and raw, was nothing compared to power. He was a brilliant boy. He learned too well.
Bagra's hand shot out. With surprising accuracy, she seized my wrist.
Put your hunger aside, Alina. Do what Morozova and my son could not, and give this up.
My cheeks were wet with tears. I hurt for her. I hurt for her son. But even so, I knew what my answer would be. I can't.
What is infinite? She recited.
I knew that text well. The universe and the greed of men, I quoted back to her.
You may not be able to survive the sacrifice that Merzost requires. You have tasted that power once, and it almost killed you.
I have to try. Bagra shook her head.
Stupid girl, she said.
But her voice was sad, as if she were chastising another girl from long ago, lost and unwanted, driven by pain and fear. The journals...
Years later, I returned to the village of my birth. I wasn't sure what I would find. My father's workshop was long gone, but his journals were there, tucked away in the same hidden niche in the old cellar.
She released a disbelieving snort.
They'd built a church over it.
I hesitated, then said, If Morozova survived, what became of him?
He probably took his own life. It's the way most Grisha of great power die.
I sat back, stunned. Why?
Do you think I never contemplated it? That my son didn't? Lovers age, children die, kingdoms rise and fall, and we go on. Maybe Morozova is still wandering the earth, older and more bitter than I am. Or maybe he used his power on himself and ended it all. It's simple enough. Like calls to like. Otherwise...
She chuckled again, that dry, rattling laugh.
You should warn your prince. If he really thinks a bullet will stop a Grisha with 3 amplifiers... He's much mistaken.
I shuddered. Would I have the courage to take my own life if it came down to that? If I brought the amplifiers together, I might destroy the fold, but I might well make something worse in its place. And when I faced the Darkling, even if I dared to use Merzost to create an army of light, would it be enough to end him? Bagra, I asked cautiously. What would it take to kill a Grisha with that kind of power? Bagra tapped the bearskin of my wrist, the naked spot where the 3rd amplifier might rest in a matter of days.
Little saint, she whispered. Little martyr. I expect we'll find out.
I spent the rest of the afternoon working a plea for aid to the apparat. The missive would be left beneath the altar at the Church of Sankt Lucan in Vernost, and hopefully would make its way to the White Cathedral through the network of the faithful. We'd used a code that Tolya and Tamar knew from their time with the Soldat Sol, so if the message fell into the Darkling's hands, he wouldn't realize that in just over 2 weeks' time, Mal and I would be waiting for the apparat's forces in Karjeva. The racing city was all but abandoned after the summer, and it was close to the southern border. Either we would have the Firebird or we wouldn't, but we'd be able to march whatever forces we had north under the cover of the fold and meet with Nikolai's troops south of Krybirsk. I had 2 very different sets of luggage. One was nothing but a simple soldier's pack that would be put aboard the Bittern. It was stocked with rough-spun trousers, an olive drab coat treated to resist the rain, heavy boots, a small reserve of coin for any bribes or purchases I might need to make in Dvostolba, a fur hat, and a scarf to cover Morozova's collar. The other set was stowed on the Kingfisher,
a collection of 3 matching trunks emblazoned with my golden sunburst and stuffed with silks and furs. When evening came, I descended to the boiler level to say my